Hey guys, welcome back to Wildest Career Stories. I'm Craig.
And I'm Carolina.
And for those of you who are joining us for the first time, this is a podcast series where we're covering wildlife, photography, and conservation, along with a couple of very, very cool bush and wildlife stories.
They don't sound very cool when you say it with that flat voice. You don't sound too excited for these cool bush stories.
I was thinking about like going like David Attenborough,
Oh,
but
yeah.
yeah, it just didn't work, did
No,
it?
you don't have an accent. Hey guys, before we jump into this episode, I just wanted to say you might notice that the sound is a little bit different today. We have new microphones, and we're testing them out, and I'm just praying, hoping that they are gonna last the whole episode and that they're gonna work properly. So I apologize if the sound is weird. I hope it's gonna be great. We have been testing now and it sounds great, but in case it's not, then you guys know.
Give us some feedback on these little microphones. They look fantastic.
They
They
so the
look
thing is
amazing, but they're
why we were excited about them is because they are wireless, so they're Bluetooth, but at the same time, anything wireless is always like a little bit unreliable, and that's what I'm nervous about today.
they can't handle my incredibly loud voice. We've
Yeah.
been sitting here struggling with these things for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
But anyway, not important. The important thing is we're back on air with you guys, and the break wasn't as long as it was between the last episode. So
Yeah.
that's always good.
A win.
When we did it before, the last episode we released, there was quite a long pause.
But I think last time we did a podcast, you were just about to head to Kruger, and now you have
I've
just
just
gotten
gotten back,
back.
which was it was a 10 or 11 day trip, so great. So we fit in the time
It
frame.
was perfect. Yeah, perfect
Yeah.
timing. But tell us, it was an amazing trip from what I've heard.
It was very cool. It was very cool. It went with one of our Instagram followers.
Yeah.
He reached out. He's from Brazil, Fabio, an amazing guy, and parents were amazing. He traveled with his two parents. And yeah, just incredible people.
And amazing guests.
Just completely open-minded from a wildlife point of view. So like it was never, if there's guides out there listening, people and guests can be a bit demanding. There was not one hint of demand from these people. They were just so eager to just be out in nature. I suppose it did the fact that Fabio is a guide in the Pantanal does help.
Yeah, he knows where you like what it's like and how unpredictable animals can be. But they also like just had such a strong passion for like being out in nature in the bush. And when you go with that mindset, like you are setting yourself up for success. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Because if you go with the mindset that whatever we see, we're gonna have a fantastic time, then you're gonna see amazing things.
And yeah, we did. We had some incredible sightings. I mean, on day one, as we came in, because it was a Kruger trip, we basically went into the national park for 10 days. And we did the central and the southern sector of the Kruger National Park. So we started and we came in at Orphan Gate. And the first 3 nights we stayed at Sitara. And as we were coming in, there were two cheetah, a female and a sub-adult, next to the road, not really doing much. And that was an amazing start. And we came back that afternoon and we were very, very lucky because they got up and they crossed the road in front of us. So it was an incredible sighting. And that was the only time we saw cheetahs. So that was very, very
Oh,
cool.
wow. Yeah.
We also, and I think the highlights of the trip for me was Casper on about day, I think it was the day we were leaving Sitara to head down to the south to Bergendal, and we came across him. And we it what was amazing about the sighting was like most people that leave Sitara either jump onto the open road, jump onto the S100 or jump onto the H6. N Very few people go south because there's no loops further south of that. And about 3 Ks down, because we were doing our travel day to get down to Birkendal, and about God must have a good couple of Ks down past the H6, we see the shadow kind of on the horizon, and I'm like, okay, cool, there's a lion on the road. Clearly, you can see from the main. amazing. We're like, and everyone gets excited. Great, lion walking down the road. As he just approaches and approaches and approaches, we see, and I'm like, that looks like a very, very, very white lion. And it happened to be Casper. So that was amazing. And Casper, for those of you who don't know, is one of four male lions, or four white lions. Sorry, my apologies. Four white lions in the Greater Kruger National Park. He is a leucistic lion, which basically means it's very different to albino. Leucism is lack of pigment, and an albino is no pigment whatsoever. So he, the leucistic genetic in Kruger National Park is a recessive gene that only a select number of lions have in the park.
Yeah, so it's very, very few. You said four.
So yeah,
isn't three adults, and then now we have.
I'm just trying to work news it out about my head.
We have news about a cub, but I think we don't start counting the cub until it's reached like 1 year.
Yeah, of fair age, enough. Eh? Fair enough. But also, we can't even count that young male anymore, because I haven't seen updates on the young male from the Birmingham Pride. There's an adult female that's just had cubs. She also gave birth to a white lion cub, but that cub didn't make it. But then another female within the Birmingham Pride gave birth to a white cub that is a little female that is currently still alive. But yeah, you don't really count them until they're a year old. But there is the white female part of the Birmingham Pride, Casper, part of the Shishangan males. And then there is the white sub-adult male who was last seen hanging around Nitsiri, Ingwalala, Northern Timbavati, but I haven't seen updates on him for a very, very long time. So either he has been killed, or he's just moving into an area that is not so commercial.
And where we don't get updates about him.
Exactly. So if anyone does have an update on him, please give me a shout. I love following the dynamics of them and where they're going in the Kruger region.
No, amazing. Yeah, it sounds like it was an incredible trip. And I joined you guys for the last 2 days when you were at Kakuza and also had a great time just to meet the guests and say hi, because I couldn't join earlier, even though I would have loved to, because I was busy launching my editing course.
You were indeed. And how's that going?
Well, it's gone really, really well. And anyone who's follows me on Instagram knows I feel quite overwhelmed with all the like support that I've received for the editing course, and all the people who have ordered, and also like the people who have messaged and, you know, shown their support and shared the course on their social medias and so on, and recommended to other people. And it's just been honestly like one of those times where I just feel so incredibly grateful for the community that I have on social media, and how incredibly supportive everyone is, and it literally makes me being able to live my dream life possible, which is absolutely incredible. And so I can't put into words how grateful I am for that. So it's been amazing.
If I can just add, like, also I might be the biased partner here, but you have worked incredibly hard over the last couple of months.
I have worked really hard. Thank you. It has been, that's also part of it, is kind of like relief being done with this project. Do you know what I mean? Because for the past couple of months, this has been consuming my whole life pretty much. Yeah. And I've been working like day in, day out for this project and filming. And it's been stressful from time to time. I've learned a lot along the way. And it's been an incredible journey. So now it's also coming to an end where I'm like, okay, I can breathe. I have launched it. Everything is going well. Everyone seems to be enjoying the course, and that is all I want. So yeah, so it is, that's also a big part of it. It's just relief being able to like breathe and chill a little bit now, and prepping for the next things that are coming up in just a few weeks, or actually starting like this week.
Let's chat a little bit about that. Like, what are we doing in the next couple of weeks? My goodness.
Yeah, so now we're jumping. I think we mentioned it last episode. Now we're jumping into like busy season, and it's just going, like, it's just this ball is just rolling from here. We have a thing with Sony this weekend, which is awesome. Very excited for that. Going away teaching with Open Window, which is a what do you call it, like a photography school here in South Africa, photography and design and other things. So that's amazing. Super excited for that. And then we just have a few days, and then we go to Campfire Academy, and I'll be teaching the photography course there for a few days, which also super excited. I did that last year as well, and always a lot of fun. And again, as you guys know, I love teaching, so enjoy this part of my job a lot. And then straight from there, we drive up to Joburg to then fly to Upington to meet our guests and go on a 10-day, first 10 days in Kalahari, and then about 10 to 11 days in Namibia.
Yeah.
And that is going to be a wild adventure as well. I think we spoke a bit on this on the last episode, actually, talking about what that trip is going to be like. But yeah, now it's
It's
happening,
happening.
getting
It's
close.
happening. It's going to be good. I've also got to renew my first aid at some stage between all this chaos that's going on, just in case you were wondering,
Yeah.
guys.
Thanks, Craig. I'll make sure not to have a heart attack before you renew
Please, please,
it.
please.
And I'm sure our guests going to Kalahari is going to be happy you've just done
That
your
I've
first
redone my first aid.
aid. But anyway, that's enough about our busy schedule and what we are up to. I want to talk about something else this episode. We have been thinking about it while talking between us about something we need to talk about on the episode, and that is how to become a wildlife photographer and what makes you a professional wildlife photographer.
So can I, as someone that is like an amateur, or as I call myself on Instagram, a wannabe photographer, can I ask the questions?
Okay.
Because you are a professional. So I know, and we have this rant with each other all the time, what defines a professional wildlife photographer? What defines a wildlife photographer? And yeah, let's chat a little bit about the differences, because currently what I see on Instagram is everyone's a professional wildlife photographer.
Well, it's a little bit of a gray area between these, and there's no, obviously no official like definition. And I'm not the one to decide
Can I
this
just stop
either.
you there for a second? Because there should be a definition.
Yeah,
Because there should be a massive, massive difference. Because I can't call myself, okay, I'm going to start running around calling myself a professional rugby player and
okay.
just start, because I can catch a rugby ball, I am
Yeah.
now a professional rugby player.
So this is the funny thing with photography, and I'm going to get into this a little bit more later, because and that's what makes photography a really tricky industry to get into, because everyone calls themselves a professional, even though they might not be. And then at the same time, because people call themselves professional, they also sell themselves short to, when they work with companies and stuff, and then companies take advantage of people because they also think, so like even though everyone calls themselves a professional, companies who we try to work with and like actually make a living doing what we are professional in, they take advantage of us thinking that we are just hobby photographers, or they take advantage of hobby photographers because everyone has a camera and everyone is a professional nowadays. So it like devalues the industry a lot. Anyway,
Okay.
but I'll get to that later at a later stage. Let's talk about this definition. So from the general understanding, again, I'm not the one to decide this definition and so on, but general understanding when it comes to someone being a professional photographer, no matter if that is a wildlife photographer or not, is they make 50% out of their income or more from photography. And obviously, what that income comes from within photography is also quite fluid, and like there's a lot of different things, and I'll get into that now later as well, because I get a lot of questions about that, like how do you actually make money from photography. I will get into that, I promise. But that is basically the definition of a
Of a professional.
professional.
Okay.
It is that you that this is your profession in the sense that you make more than 50% of your income on photography. That is what most where I'm getting this from, for anyone who want to fact check and whatever, is that most competitions that you enter will have a professional and an amateur category, and it will say in the definition that if you make more than 50% of your income as a photographer, then you are a professional, so you need to go to that category.
I also know like there's certain there are certain competitions that I see like online and whatnot that also state like, oh, if you've ever won a prize before for photography or you get paid for your photography, you're not allowed to enter this competition.
So that's the thing. So this is where, like, obviously you have those are like amateur competitions, and they are supposed to be only for amateurs who only do this as a hobby, you know. And for example, I know there's the Kruger Magazine has a competition like that. That ever since I actually started doing photography full time, I can't enter that competition anymore. So because it is for amateurs, and I've
Well, photography is your full-time job. That's
exactly.
what you do for a living.
So I have just been like, okay, I can't enter that competition, even though I love the community that that competition like kind of creates around it. Anyway, so that is a competition like that. But then you have this like in between thing where you have people who maybe have won a competition before, who maybe earn a little bit of money from the photography, or like have a qualification. And actually, like, are they really good, and they have the like qualification like backing them kind of thing, but they're not making 50% of their income from photography. So like you have that in between kind of thing. So they're not amateur because they like obviously like know their way around the camera and have, as you said, won competitions and stuff, but they're also not professional in the sense that they earn 50% of their income from photography.
All right,
So that's the
okay.
little gray area, and I think those are the people who often call themselves professional, although they maybe don't fall into that category, even though, like, obviously they create professional work. That's also the thing here. It's complicated because you can still create very professional work and be really, really good, even though you're technically not a professional.
And also I think that another gray area comes into to play where you've got the professional wildlife photographer versus professional landscape photographer. And there's different
Yes.
professions within the photographic field.
Yes, very much. Oh, yeah, that's a thing. Like you have someone who might be a portrait or a wedding photographer. That
And that's a
doesn't,
skill on its own, isn't
oh,
it? Like
100%.
repeat, I've seen some of this stuff. They're like really, really good.
Oh, 100%. Like that is, and that's the thing with photography as well, is that you have so many different areas that you can be professional in. And if you're professional in one, doesn't mean you're professional in another.
No, for
So,
sure.
wedding, for example, like I am super intimidated by wedding photographers. Like I think they are absolutely badass, and I think what they do is something that I would never be able to do. And I have had a few requests, like people asked me, it's been like friends and family and stuff, been like, would you shoot our wedding? Obviously, because I know my way around a camera, and they like, you know, it's friends and family, so they trust me and so on. But
Why? Why wouldn't you do it?
well, that's the thing. I'm like, there's so much pressure there. And I am not a professional wedding photographer. I can take photos of you, yes, and I can make sure that they're correctly exposed, and they can probably come out quite pretty. And like I've obviously done a bit of portraits in other senses and stuff. But wedding is a whole different flipping ball game, hey?
Yeah,
Like
the people at weddings are basically animals, you know, especially at like 11 o'clock at night. It's basically like shooting wildlife.
That
I'm
is
kidding. I'm
very
kidding.
fair,
I'm
very fair.
kidding.
But I'm just saying, like, even though I would be able to get really good shots, I would not be able to do it as professionally as a professional wedding photographer. Do you see what I'm coming
I hear what
from?
you're saying. And it's also it's a completely different style of photography. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And it's there's the thing is also like using weddings as an example is a very good example when talking about this, because you need to know a lot more than just how to take photos using your camera doing a wedding. Like it is a lot about like the timing and the organizing with the wedding couple, making sure that they are comfortable. I've listened to a lot of podcasts talking about this. That's why I
Wedding
know this stuff.
photography,
No,
okay.
just photography in general, and then people interview wedding photographers.
All right.
So like you need to make sure that the couple feels very comfortable. You need to be able to direct them and say like pose like this, pose like that, which is something that I do not know with wild because I'm a wildlife photographer. We never pose our subjects. Do you know what I mean? So like, see, that is a
It's
completely
actually so true.
different.
I've never thought about it, but you're
And I
100% true.
think a wedding photographer would feel the opposite going into my role, because they would be like, oh, but I can't tell the animal what to do. Like,
Can the lion just walk over there,
do you
please?
see what I'm
Craig, Craig,
exactly?
make it happen.
But do you see what I'm saying? So it's a completely different ball game. But anyway, enough about like wedding. What I'm just saying is that you can be a professional in one field, but not a professional in a different field. And just because you know one field doesn't ma automatically make you like great at a different field. It might be easier for me to get into wedding photography because I'm like halfway there knowing my camera, but I would still not call myself a professional. And I would want to, like, if I ever were to do weddings, which I don't think I will because I find it very intimidating, I would want to do like at least three, four or five weddings for free without the pressure so that I would build that confidence or like be a second photographer for a wedding photographer to see how they work and
So,
stuff.
like, with regards to going back to the professional question, is that like a stat? Like, it is
Oh, the
the
50% thing.
50%? Is that a thing? Like, 50% of your income needs to come from photography in order for you to be a professional, or is
No, but
it
this is
like
so this is
just is it just like a contribution of some of your salary needs to come from that?
well, so that's the thing. Like, as I said, on these competitions and stuff, that's kind of what they're stating. But then also I think it's such a gray area that I think if you are earning some, you can call yourself a professional.
So just a portion.
I don't have the answer
Okay.
like honestly, that's what I'm saying. This is the like general rule of thumb, but there is no specific regulations. There is no like stamp on your CV or whatever. I have a photography qualification, so I have that on my CV, but me being a professional wildlife photographer, the only thing that is backing me saying that I'm a professional wildlife photographer is because that is my full-time income. So it's a very gray area.
I just think, and yeah, it needs to be like, in I'm talking from an outsider's perspective, and I think I can be quite opinionated on this because I know I'm not a professional wildlife
And I
photographer.
respect you a lot for not saying that you are and pretending like you are, because
I'm
a lot of
not.
people do pretend.
No, exactly. And again, I go back to my let's just use sports because I love sports. I'm a professional sportsman. I can just go run around and because I play cricket at Skukuza, I can now tell everyone and tell the world that I'm a professional sports. I don't think that's right. There needs to be a level, an entry level for you to be a professional, semi-professional. You know, that's how most industries work.
Absolutely, but
And I think that's,
it's because, and this is the thing. So to move on from your rant about what is professional or not, because there's no, as I said, there's no answer. It's super, super gray area, and it's honestly just comes down to you being like honest about like, if, am I professional or not? At the same time, like what I also want to say is like I don't want to discourage people. It like there's also a level of fake it until you make it kind of thing as well. But I think the most important thing is that if you like. Come off if you portray yourself as a professional, you need to feel confident to like back up your knowledge and like know that you have some type of like level of like a foundation of knowledge for a camera, for example, like knowing photography and having some type of qualification. And also like if you're gonna work with companies and stuff and work with people, you need to have some type of experience to back yourself up with. Do you see what I'm saying?
I think if there's no, and this is the problem, is we chat about it quite a lot about how the industry and individuals within the industry are devalued. Is that a word? You are devalued is a word.
Yes.
Or undervalued. Undervalued is the better word to use. Is people in the industry are undervalued because there's no baseline on what a professional is. For so many years, and this is again me talking from not being a professional, for so many years, photography was just a hobby. There was very few professionals or people in the world that could do what, sorry, maybe the biased boyfriend, what you can do with a camera. You know what I'm
Well,
saying?
okay, so I would say there was a lot of professionals, but I think the gap between professional and hobbyist was bigger. Because like professional cameras are so accessible today. So like, and yes, they are expensive, but they are accessible for like the general person. And that is what makes a very big difference. And also like when it comes to wildlife, the wildlife is a lot more accessible than your general person. For your general person. So like you can go out with a you can buy a professional camera and go out and drive with your own car to Kruger and you can get amazing photos of wildlife, which I think is fantastic. There's nothing wrong with that. That's not what I'm saying. But you can get amazing photos while, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, like it was a operation to go
Yeah,
out and
okay, fair
photograph a
enough.
lion. Do you see what I'm saying? So I
Fair
think that
enough.
is the big difference now, is that the gap between hobby and photography and professional is a lot smaller. But I think enough about that. I think the answer to why it is this way and why there is no baseline is because 99% of all photographers, or like 90% maybe, I don't know the stats, I'm throwing out numbers here, but most photographers are self-employed and are freelancers and set their own numbers, and you don't go to a school, a university, and you do wildlife photography, and then you get a job at a company, and now you're there for 20 years doing wildlife photography for this company. That's not how it works. And that's what I want to get into next, is like, how do you actually become a wildlife photographer? Like, what is the steps then to become a professional wildlife photographer? So, if you're done with your rant
About
about.
being professional. Okay, cool. Tell us how you started, where you were, but I suppose a lot of us know that, but from a
Yeah,
wildlife photography
I'm
point
gonna
of
try
view.
to keep it short.
Okay, you have 6.5 minutes. Go. No, I'm joking.
So I want to start with talking about like my journey and how I ended up where I am, because I think that sets the baseline of like what you can do. And then I'm gonna talk a little bit more about like what the other options are and what you can do, because it's very different from everywhere for everyone. I did photography courses in school, in high school, because I had an interest in photography already. I got my first camera when I was 15 because I enjoyed, like, I did like photo shoots with my friends and stuff. So I had an interest in photography, and I learned the basics on this photography course in school and learned a bit about editing and stuff. So that's kind of where my baseline was for like learning about photography. Then when I graduated high school, I came to South Africa for my 2 month trip. And my dad was like, "Well, you're going to Africa, like you need a telephoto lens." So he gave me his telephoto lens to borrow during the trip because I didn't have my own. And it was like I think it was a 70 to 200 or something like that. It was a push and pull, fully manual focus. So I didn't have any autofocus, nothing, did everything manually, which I do think has helped me to where I am today, where I had to do the manual thing. So I know like how to do
That
that.
thing must have been old
It was very
because
old. Oh
only
yeah.
manual focus.
Yeah, very old. Anyway, sorry, that's a sidestep. But and I was taking photos of the wildlife, that we saw on Game Drive and stuff during my 2 months here, while I was actually at a horse safari, and the horses was the focus of my trip. But I started enjoying the photography side a lot when we were out on Game Drives, and other people also had cameras. So we all chatted a lot about cameras and stuff. So that's kind of where like the wildlife thing started. And then when I came back, about a year and a half later, I came back to do my guiding qualification. So the FGASA, as it's called, level one. That basically makes me a qualified safari guide or nature guide. I came back to do that, and now at this point, I had my own telephoto lens. So this one had autofocus, and I continued doing the wildlife photography thing during this course, and also learning a lot. Obviously, studying to be a guide, I learned a lot about wildlife behavior and the ins and out of the ecosystem that we were in. And again, I think that really, really helped me as a wildlife photographer. I think it's amazing to have that, and it's very, very important to have that like base knowledge for the wildlife that you are photographing. So during this course, I was taking a lot of photos, and at the end of the course, my friend said, "Your photos are amazing. Why don't you post them on like Instagram? And why do you not have a wildlife Instagram?" And I was like, "That is so cringe. Like everyone who comes to Africa starts a wildlife Instagram. Like I don't want to be
And they
so
have it for like
mainstream."
3 weeks, and when they run out of their photos from their trip, they
Exactly.
just stop posting.
And I was like, "No, that feels so cringe. Like I'm not good enough, and like I don't know." And she was like, "You are 100% good enough." And she pushed me, and she was like, "Just do it. What's the worst that can happen? And like imagine where it might take you," which is just wild to think about today, when like where my Instagram is at and how it's literally become a full-time job. So she was a big reason for me actually starting my Instagram. I remember in the beginning, I felt like it was so cringe that I didn't like show it to any of my friends or fam. I think maybe my family, But I didn't want like people from high school to follow me, and I didn't want them to know. And I only followed other wildlife photographers, and I think that was the key. Because all of a sudden, like I remember I was posting, and I would be like, it would be like a photo of a lion. I would be like, here's a zebra, because I thought it was funny.
Are you serious? You've never told me that.
If anyone feels like it, go way, 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 way back on my Instagram, and the first few posts are like super ironic captions
This is a zebra.
because I felt so. Or I'd be like there would be like an obvious photo of an elephant, and I'd be like, spot the elephant or something. Because I felt like it was so cringe, and I felt so embarrassed about it. So anyway,
Oh, that's actually so funny.
right.
I need to go look at those
Yeah.
photos. That's brilliant.
So that's how I started, and I would start posting. But I think the big thing was I started following other wildlife photographers, and all of a sudden I started getting a lot of inspiration, and I saw these photos and I was like, wow, I want to be able to take that those type of photos, and this is amazing. How did they take those photos? And that sparked like me investing in learning more photography,
Who was
more
some of,
wildlife photography.
sorry, who was some of your early
Few of those posts.
inspirations?
Well, definitely like Chaz Young was a huge inspiration. Still is. He's amazing. Still is
Anyone
a huge
else?
inspiration. I can't remember any specific people right now. Why? Other than
Just
Chaz
wondering,
Young.
it's interesting.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I can't from the top of my head. I can't remember anyone. But there's a lot of people that I still follow to this day. And it wasn't always like big names like Chaz Young. It was also other people who were on like a similar level to me, but are slightly above. Where I was like, oh, this is kind of reachable. Do you know what I mean? Like, I could,
I
and
hear
I can't
you.
remember those specific people now, but yeah, I was like, oh, I could, like, this, they good better than me, but they're not Chaz Young better than me. Like, they're just slightly better than me. Okay, I could probably get to their level. And that really motivated me to learn more, and also like seeing other people's work, you know, that really, really helped. So I kept on posting on Instagram, and I started working in the lodge industry together with you. Living in South Africa and living in the bush. And that was also next key step to being able to do this full time eventually. I was, you know, exposed to living in the bush, having the privilege to be able to go on staffed game drives every now and then. Sometimes I was allowed to join the guests. I was not a guide at this point, just side note. I was working as front of house, which is like guest relations and
You
like
were a qualified guide, though.
reception. Yeah, I qualified, but I wasn't working as a guide. And so yeah, so I was able to be out in the bush, and I remember a key moment where I went down to the lodge in the afternoon when everyone out was out on drive, because I had seen a kingfisher around and I wanted to try to take a photo of the kingfisher. And I came down to the lodge in the afternoon, and the sun was setting and the light was gorgeous. And these monkeys came around and they were eating the flowers of, I'm gonna hope I say this correctly now, the weeping boorbean.
The Burbine,
Did
yes,
I
well
say it
done.
right? Okay, great.
Well done.
And these flowers are like bright red flowers, and the monkeys were like stuffing their face with these flowers, and I was photographing them. And because of like the beautiful light, like the photographs came out stunning. Like to this day, they are some of my favorite photographs, because that was a moment where it clicked for me, where I was like, oh wow, look, I can create something like this if I set myself up for it. Like I went down in the afternoon. Oh, the light is a lot more beautiful this time of the day than it is middle of the day. I know that sounds obvious, but like it was kind of like
What you were 19 or 20?
I was 21 at that point, I think.
Okay.
But still, it was early on in my photography career, and I was like, oh wait, look at this blurry background. How did that happen? And like, you know, all of those kind of things kind of started clicking, and that was a key moment where I was like, wow, if I on purpose go down a specific time of the day, I can get amazing photographs instead of just like, I have my camera with me every now and then. If something happens, I take a photo. Like, because that was what it had been before. So that was a key change. Sorry, this is becoming a long story. But anyway, we worked in the lodge industry again. That gave me a chance to be in the bush and so on, which is important. And then we moved to a different lodge, worked at a different place, and lockdown happened. And that was the next like key step, because all of a sudden lockdown happened, we didn't have guests, and I had a lot of free time. So I invested a lot of time into my wildlife photography and into my Instagram. So I was on Instagram for hours. This was before Reels. I think Reels came like a year after. This was before Reels, and you couldn't like grow from a reel going viral. Like that, sometimes a photo would get a lot of traction, but like
Yeah.
the way that you grew was commenting on other people's stuff, which I still do to this day. I still think it's a great way to grow and create community, is to find other people with similar interests and comment and like, you know, follow anyone that you find like these photos are cool, I like what they do, and then they might follow you back. Following like 100 people and then unfollowing those 100 people is a very dumb idea.
But it
But
also is like it was effective back in the day, and now it's like very not effective.
yeah, it actually hurts you more
Yeah.
than it helps you. But anyway, so I spent a lot of time on Instagram creating this community and commenting on like a lot of other people's photos and interacting with the people that I followed and who followed me and so on. And that's when it started, like the ball started rolling. And I also during this time did a photography qualification. A lot of people ask me where I did the qualification, and it was online. I'm not going to recommend this company because the qualification was good, but the company itself do like the information was good and lessons were good, but it's a bit of like a pyramid scam, a pyramid
Scheme,
scheme,
yeah.
and it's also impossible, like almost impossible to like sign up when
Deregister yourself.
deregister yourself.
I remember you went through the struggle.
So there's better places. I don't have any on top of my head right now, but like I'm sorry, I'm not going to recommend this place because even though the qualification I got was good and I learned a lot, it was just such a mission, and I think I ended up paying like triple the amount that I should have because they were just so complicated and like it was not good. Anyway, so that's just a side story, but that was the qualification that then like made me like kind of gave me a foundation of like, okay, I could possibly do this professionally because I have this qualification now backing me and I had learned a lot. And that's when it started growing a lot more. And about a year after that, I opened my print shop, and that was the first time I earned money from my photography. I opened my print shop again. I invested in a course that doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately. It was another person on social media, another photographer who was doing this like print shop 10-day like challenge kind of thing, where he went through step to step how to open up your shop, which was amazing. He doesn't do this course anymore. Otherwise, I would 100% recommend it because it was literally what got me to where I am today. But yeah, so that was. Then I opened my shop, and within the first week, I had made back the money that I invested in the course and invested in opening the shop. And then a few months later, it was like Black Friday, and I had a sale for on my shop, and someone ordered 15 prints in one order from the shop. And that was when I was like, whoa, like this is like double my salary at the time. In one order, just bang, done. And I was like, these kind of things can happen. This is wild. Like, I can make money from this. That was like a really like a aha moment of like, I could make money from this and I can like make this into a career kind of thing. Anyway, sorry, this is becoming a longer story. But then shortly after that, about 6 months after that, I think we resigned from our job. And we started our company. And that's an important part to like remember when it comes to what I do as a wildlife photographer. Our company and my photography works hand in hand.
Yeah,
Like,
100%.
and it's not just me doing wildlife photography all the time, like hosting guests and our company and, you know, travel agency does work very much hand in hand in that as well.
100%. It's all merged in into one business.
Exactly. So yeah, that is now 2 years ago, or more than 2 years ago,
More than
actually.
2 years ago. February 2022. So 2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Yeah, well, we left.
Exactly. We had started the company before that, but
Yeah.
that's when we went full time.
Exactly. Obviously, like we hear about all these success stories. And yours is one of them and amazing. But like, let's talk a little bit about how people start. Like, how do you start becoming a wildlife photographer? Because not everyone has access to the wild.
Yeah, so it's a really good question, and I think obviously like you start by just picking up a camera and you start photographing any animal that you have around you. That's how you just start learning. Like squirrels in your garden, birds, there's birds everywhere in the world. So wherever you are in the world, there's birds to photograph. You just need to look for them. And then obviously you can move over to bigger wildlife. Again, start locally because, you know, that's the best place to learn and so on. If you're able to invest in a trip to Africa with a wildlife photographer, myself, for example, where I can teach you, just a plug there for my workshops. But, you know, where I can teach you like face to face and help you, then that's amazing. But I think also a good way to do it is that you can try to get a job in an area where there is wildlife, like a seasonal job. Hospitality is a great way to do this, for example. Like, try to get a job like at a hotel or whatever it might be where there is wildlife, and that will give you the chance to be in this environment while working a different job and then building your skill as a wildlife photographer, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think like Carolina says, like, I think in my opinion is like every single country has natural areas. It doesn't have to be a national park. There's parks that have birds, like you said, and squirrels and stuff like that. Like, you don't have to go anywhere, and that's just kind of your baseline. Just, it doesn't make you any less of a wildlife photographer just because you're not photographing a lion or an elephant.
No, exactly. And I think people focus on that a little bit too much.
Yeah, they focus on the big things.
And maybe your goal and your dream is to photograph animals in Africa, for example, or the Arctic or whatever. But you need to start somewhere, right?
Exactly.
And starting locally is the best way to do it. And then if you're able to then invest in like wildlife photography trips, either, again, like locally or closer to you, like if you live in Europe, like there's a lot more wildlife in Europe than people realize. But then, or in America, there's also a lot of wildlife, you know, invest in trips where you can go, you still travel, but you maybe travel a bit closer, and then eventually invest in trips to the continent that you really want to photograph wildlife in, whatever that might be. But again, like also, if you really, really want to like put yourself in that specific environment, you're probably not going to like be able to do that as a wildlife photographer from the start. You're going to have to do other jobs to be able to end up there and then build from there. Like for me, that was the front of house, like working in the lodges. That's how I...
Volunteering.
I was volunteering at first, not even earning money, just because I wanted to be in the bush. So that's kind of how you start. And then, you know, you need to figure out how you can best build a business connected to your wildlife photography. And this is the complicated and tricky part. And this is where there is no easy answers, because it's all about you. You literally need to build a business, and that's not an easy thing. And that can be selling prints. That can be selling like information and teaching. That's, I do that a lot. Obviously, I host workshops where I teach people like photography and especially wildlife photography. I have my editing course now that has just launched, where I'm teaching my skills. My ebook that is teaching wildlife photography. Like, those are the kind of things that you need to find ways where you can earn money from your skills as a wildlife photographer. And again, that could be hosting trips locally in your area. I know a lot of people in Europe who host wildlife photography trips in their specific area because they have become experts in that area and know where to find the wildlife, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's just finding that little niche that you're wanting to focus on.
Exactly, and finding your way to do this. I think when it comes to prints, I want to mention this. Prints is a really, people think about that as the first thing, like the first way that you can earn money from, and it's probably the most difficult way to earn money because prints need to be quite expensive for you to make any type of profit from them. And because they're expensive, they're a difficult thing to sell because like, it's not just like a postcard that people are like, oh, I'll pay $5 for this or $1 for this. It's an expensive and it's a big investment. People need like a space in their house where they feel like they want to put this print up and everything. So there's a lot of like kind of hurdles to get past there. So prints is probably not the easiest way to do this. You can earn money from prints. But then you also need to invest a lot into that. But that is also, that goes with any part of the business. You're going to need to invest into it. And that's both time and money, because that's how a business works, you know what I mean? But yeah, I just want to say that about print, that it's a lot more complicated than people might think, to make good money off prints. And then apart from those things, you can also work with brand and photograph for companies like lodges and hotels. You can photograph for them.
But hang on, talk a little bit about that. Like, talk about how that would, like, how someone would go about that.
Well, yeah, so this is a little bit complicated, and this again comes to the business side of being a photographer. And I think a lot of people sometimes forget this. Like, you need to have a business mindset, and you need to be able to put yourself out there, and you need to be able to contact companies and tell them about like your ideas or what you can bring. What value can you bring to them as a photographer? And that can be like obviously brands, from like social media, collaborations point of view, but also like brands that maybe like outdoor brands that need photos of their products and so on. And this is where you as a wildlife photographer need to broaden your skills a bit, because taking photos of only wildlife is unfortunately really, really difficult to make money from. Just to put it into perspective, because I think a lot of people think that you just need to win a competition and then you get found by like a
Nat
big,
Geo
like a
or something,
camera brand
yeah.
or Nat Geo, and they will contact you and want to employ you. That's not really how it works. Most of the so podcast I listen to, I'm gonna link it below. It's the Photographer's Mindset podcast. They're really, really great talking about a lot of the like creator, like content creator business side of things. So photography business side of things, mindset, but also a lot of great tips and tricks of like how does it actually work creating your own photography business. And they had a photographer on, a Nat Geo photographer on and interviewed him a while ago. And that photographer said that he does not know a single Nat Geo photographer who solely earns money from his photography alone, like that owns a full income from his photography alone. And that says quite a lot. So even the Nat Geo photographers don't earn money from their wildlife photography alone. They either host trips or they, do other types of photography on the side or do other projects and so on. They don't earn money solely from wildlife photography, and
Like
that's
just
very important to
shooting
remember.
wildlife.
Yeah, so you do need to broaden your skills a little bit, to be able to maybe like do what do you call it, interior photography for lodges, for example, so that you're able to go to these places and like lifestyle shoots for lodges, being able to photograph like the guest experience for a lodge so that they can use those photos for marketing for their lodge, or product photos for outdoor brands and so on. So that with that being said, you need to broaden your skills a little bit for those kind of things. And then secondly, like how that all works is that you need to build a portfolio and be able to show your work and show that this is what I can do, this is what my skill set is, these are the type of photos that I can produce, and then reach out to companies with like ideas and with your like price kit and everything and say like this is what I can bring to the table. And this is a completely different side of things. And so like this is where there's a lot to learn about like how this whole process goes. And you basically will have to reach out to like 200 companies before one says yes. Like I promise you, it is not an easy thing. It's very time consuming, but it is possible. And when you get the ball rolling, it will
Things
snowball
start to happen.
and things start to happen. But getting started is tricky. So that's just it's just good to be aware of and understand that there's a lot more to this than just taking photos of wildlife. There's a whole business side of it. And then talking about that, I do want to mention and talk about like the value that you do bring. If you're a photographer that can literally press the shutter and get a decent photo of anything, you have value to bring. You are good enough to be able to photograph for companies, for lodges. The big side of it is being able to market yourself and, as I said, reach out to them and so on and create the business side of things. But what's very important, what I get to hear is you should price yourself correctly. Because this is where, like you were talking about earlier, Craig, where the whole industry gets devalued if you don't price yourself correctly and you do things for free because you see it as a hobby or you're just happy to earn a little bit of money from photography, anything photography related. People very often price themselves way too cheap, and then that devalues the whole industry.
I hear you. I hear you. So let's talk a little bit about what is a good. I know it's difficult to say what's a good price, but what let's say well, let's take a bigger question. What's not a good price for free?
So this is the thing. I actually, why this is very fresh in my mind and why I'm like very passionate about this at the moment is because I was reached out to by a lodge. I'm not going to mention names.
Yeah, but tell the story
Yeah,
because
it's,
it's actually ridiculous.
and I want people to know about this because it is ridiculous. So they reached out and they said, we want to do a collaboration. I said, cool, what do you have in mind? They sent me an email and they said, what we do for photographers is that they come and they get a free stay for 2 to 3 nights, where you get a free stay at their lodge and meals included, but not beverages. I was allowed to bring a partner because I was female, which I also found
How that is
funny.
emphasis, but I emphasize that I don't know.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Anyway, so I was allowed to bring a partner as well. And I was going to come and stay at their lodge for 2 to 3 days. Okay, like, fine. But what they wanted in return was 200 to 350 photos edited and ready to be used. On top of that, they also wanted 20 to 35 reels ready to be posted on social media. That is absolutely wild.
So to give you an example, because I know this lodge, we're not going to mention names, but the price tag for this lodge is about 3,000 rand per person per night of stay.
That's like
So
$150 per person per
it's
night.
let's work it on. If you were going to have a partner, it's 18,000 rand. Just tell everyone what the value of that little.
So this is the thing. I wrote back to the lodge and I explained to them how this works because they obviously, I'm sure they don't have experience. And this is unfortunately the problem sometimes, that marketing people for some lodges don't have experience with actual marketing and have backing with actual marketing. So they think that hobby photographers will just come and stay at their lodge for free and then give them 300 photos. First of all, like for me to create 350 photos, that would take me months. Like I could maybe do that in 1 month.
We were discussing, we went to Tanzania and
Yeah, so we
we didn't
went on a
send any.
project to Tanzania 2 years ago for a whole month, and I don't think that I sent, I can't remember how many photos I sent that company. Yeah, because it's 2 years ago, but I don't think I sent 200 photos. I don't think I had 200 photos after the month of shooting for them. So like that's just to put it that into perspective. If I were to take photos, 300 photos in 3 days, that is 100 photos per day. I'd be running around like absolutely crazy, and it would not be a free stay holiday where I am actually getting to enjoy what they are thinking they're giving me in return. I would be there to work and I'll be working 24/7. I would probably not be able to produce the quality that I, pride myself in and that I think that they would probably want. So it was an absolutely crazy ask. I explained back to them and said, like, explaining a bit of like the value of my gear alone, how much that is valued. Not that the lodge needs to cover that, but it just shows like this is the value you're bringing just
Well, that's what
with
you
your gear,
invested in your
in my gear
just your
alone.
equipment.
Exactly. And then, you talk about like the photography fee. So first of all, you would be, I would charge them for, so if I were to do this shoot and doing, getting, if I were to get the 300 photos that they're asking for, I would have to be there for a month. Let's start with that. And I gave them the price for that time, for being there for a month, which obviously adds up to quite a lot because it's a whole month. So first of all, they would need to pay for my time. Secondly, just because a lodge pays for your time or a brand or anything pays for your time to take the photos, doesn't give them the right to the photos. The photos are still yours. Like you have full right to the photos. And they actually have to pay a licensing fee for the photos depending on what they want to use it for. And this licensing fee depends on if they want to use it on social media, if they want to use it on digital, like websites and stuff, or if they want to like have like billboards and like physical prints of them. And then they will pay that licensing fee monthly for however long they want to use it. So then obviously you can negotiate with a brand and you will have like your photos, like the price of them, and then you multiply it by a certain percentage depending on what they want to use the photos for. And then you multiply that per month and then they will pay you for that. And then you can obviously negotiate with a brand. So like for a shoot like this, like if I would be there for a whole month and then give them like a certain amount of photos, I would obviously like give them a big package price because it's a big job and it's a big project. So they wouldn't have to pay the same as if they were paying for one photo, for example. But that's just to put that into perspective of how that all works. And I think all of this, I think calculating it all out added up to about like almost 1 million rand, for the value of all of those things that they were asking for. So that is not the same as a free stay
No.
at all. And I think that's just so important for people to know what you can do for a free stay if you, for example, like want to be able to go to a lodge and try to be like have the opportunity to be out in the bush and also build your portfolio and so on. Is usually like 5 to 10 photos, and for 2 to 3 days, it's usually like 5 to 10 photos and maybe some exposure on social media. Like I would say, like I'll post a little bit about your lodge, like while I'm there, I'll post on stories that I'm there, and if I post the photos I take, I'll tag you guys and whatever and recommend you. That is a fair ask, for a 2 to 3 stay at a lodge, not 300
I
photos.
suppose also like what photographers, but don't get me wrong, I'm not the professional. Negotiation is on the cards all the time, but I mean it's not like where you start talking about like, oh, it's close to 1 million rand. Like that's not, you said there would be a package price. That's not what you should price, but I mean like because it was one project, you'd probably come with a package price that would be significantly lower.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Like it's just like if you took each individual photo and time and travel and everything, put it all together, that's what it would accumulate to. So I don't think Caroline is telling you go out and charge 1 million rand for a job.
No. But with that being said, though, just so people know, there is photographers out there who are doing projects for that amount of money. Like it is possible. You obviously have to build up to that level of professionalism and so on. But like what you, so all this email when I went back to them was just to kind of teach them like what the value of
Of a
300
photographer is.
photos actually are. But one, a lodge doesn't actually want 300 photos. I promise you that, because 300 photos is a lot to go through, and you will never end up posting those 300 photos. You maybe want like maximum like 30 photos from a big photographic project, because you're never going to use all the 300 photos, so that's going to be absolutely useless to you. So first of all, if I like if a lodge would contact me and be like, hey, we need a photographer to photograph our lodge, like I would go back with them and say like, okay, what do you need photos of? Like, one, do you just need photos of wildlife? Two, or like, do you need photos of wildlife, staff, guest experience, and rooms in the lodge? Because those are like a lot of different things. And like, maybe you need photos of food. Maybe like, okay, what do you need photos of? Because that would give an idea of like approximately how long I would need to be there for, and like, yeah, how many photos I would have to take and so on. So then let's say they come back and they say, like, we only want photos of the lodge. And I'll be like, okay, where do you want to use the photos? Okay, we want to use them for like social media. Okay, cool. Then this is what I would suggest then. It's like, okay, let me go there for, depending on how big the lodge is, because if it's a very big lodge, you need more time, obviously. But like, let's say I'll go there for 4 days, and then I'll photograph the lodge, but the lodge only, because that's what you wanted. If I would get other photos as well, like I would obviously send them to them, but you know what I mean? Anyway, and then I would give them the price for my time and the time that it takes to edit the photos. And then I would talk about the licensing and depending on how long they would need the photos for and so on. And sometimes some photographers will, and I will do that sometimes as well because it makes it easy. You'll just work in the licensing into your own fee. It also depends on if it's like a repeat client and stuff. Like you can do that kind of stuff, but it is important to understand that the licensing for photos is worth a lot. And just remember that value because that is what you bring in as a photographer. So that would be like a reasonable way to talk to a lodge and be like, hey, what do you need? This is what we can provide. And if they don't have a budget, then I would say, okay, I could go for free, but then I would only give you this and this. Like that's what I would, what that could cover. Now I'm also at a point in my career where I probably wouldn't do anything for free anyway because I just, my schedule is too busy, but just so people know.
Yeah, I think it's like you said. I think, everything within reason. Like a free stay, absolutely. Content creators and photographers can go out there. Perfect. Like go. But there's a limit to what you're going to provide. Like for a free stay at a lodge, like the owner can't come back and be disappointed when you leave because that's your job. There was no payment at the end.
No.
It cost the lodge nothing. And so generally, a bit of exposure on social media stories, maybe one or two, three, four, five photos. There you go.
Exactly. I think what's important for people to remember is like, you're not there for a free holiday if you're photographing for the lodge. You're there to work. You're
Yeah.
there, like, so you're not there chilling. So the lodge saying like, yeah, but you get to stay here for free.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not really how it is because I'm not there as a normal guest just on my holiday relaxing by the pool. I'm there to
Exactly.
take photos and do my job. So that's what people need to remember when they talk to lodges about these things.
So, guys, that was wildlife photography and professional photography and any form of professional photography in a nutshell. I'm sure there's a lot more that can go into it. We
Oh,
just
absolutely.
don't have days and days and days of a podcast.
Yeah, so yeah, we're kind of running out of time. I've been rambling off on a lot. I think Craig is getting a little bit tired of listening to this.
I'm not getting tired. It's fine.
But I just wanted to put this out there, hoping that this will help people who are starting out in the industry and wondering where to go and how to go about all these things. And also, like, just making sure that people remember, like, the value that you bring, just literally owning a camera and being able to take photos, like, you have value to bring to companies and stuff. But I'm going to put some links in the description to one, the Photographer's Mindset podcast that has a lot of good resources, and then also a few Instagrams that I suggest checking out if you are interested in like heading into this field and start earning money from your photography and stuff to learn about like licensing and all of these complicated things. I'm going to put that in the description. Otherwise, I'll be rambling on for another 2 hours.
But there you have it.
There we have it.
Professional Photography in a Nutshell by Carolina Nori.
Basically.
All right, guys, thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, I hope
And
this helps.
until next time,
Cheers.
cheers.